Santorino Marciano's group. Most of this work has been done with a lot of collaborators, and most notably my PhD supervisor, Martin Bojewald at Penn State. So the main idea of this talk is that I'm going to show you how singularity resolution in quantum gravity, or the, one of the most significant modifications which result in this, can also, indeed also results in, in the emergence of non-Riemannian spacetimes and non-classical spacetimes. So the idea is that we will have as minimum inputs as possible. So the requirement is going to be that the quantum theory is covariant in a well-defined sense, and then to show that the modification responsible for singularity resolution gives you this emergence of non-classical spacetimes, which is indeed an expectation from many different quantum gravity theories, that you do not have the smooth continuum spacetime of classical GR once you quantize the theory. So specifically, we are going to work in symmetry-reduced models. Why? Because we do not know how to work in full 3 plus 1 dimensional gravity. But indeed, these are the models in which it has been shown that singularity resolution can take place when loop quantum gravity techniques are used to quantize such models. We have to be careful that we do not go to toy models which are so simple that it misses some of the key features of full gravity, so that it has to be, it has to have some notions of inhomogeneity and in anisotropy in these symmetry-reduced models as well, because otherwise we might miss some effects, which I'm going to elaborate on later on. And these simple models still have interesting implications for cosmology, as we know from loop quantum cosmology, and also some black hole models like Schwarzschild and so on. So the main motivation is to check that once I quantize these kind of symmetry-reduced models, I still go back and check some consistency conditions. And the, and the one that I'm going to focus on is one of the most important criteria, that the quantum gravity theory is anomaly-free in, and it respects some notion of general covariance, which I'm going to define later on. Okay, so just again to give you the big picture of this, it is to say that we are going to use covariance as a guiding principle in including these quantum modifications from loop quantum gravity, and then show that this shall also result in some deformed notion of the underlying spacetimes, and we do not have Riemannian spacetimes anymore. And of course, this shall have some, this has many consequences, some of which I shall try to cover in this talk and show you what it can mean if I do not have Riemannian spacetimes anymore. And finally, I'm also going to focus on some obstructions which happen once you try to include such quantum corrections from loop quantum gravity in models which have local physical degrees of freedom. And then a challenge is to avoid such such obstructions in a consistent fashion. So I took this idea from Daniele's talk last time to include as many pictures as possible. So this is just to say that we are going the opposite direction. We have a smooth classical spacetime, and if you just quantize it and keep going to the minute fundamental level, do you have something which is not that smooth anymore? Okay, so why am I talking of covariance? And this is probably known to all of you. Just to recap, is in canonical formulation, we split space-time into spatial hypersurfaces with some arbitrary time function. And then it is not so manifest as in the Lagrangian formulation that that we have covariance in the resulting system. Of course, it is covariant, and we have to, but we have to check that it is covariant. And in the classical case, all that this means is that your Hamiltonian for GR is a superposition of constraints, and these constraints form a first-class system, and the algebra of these constraints is this Dirac hypersurface deformation algebra, which I shall focus on later on. And each of these constraints, for example, the Hamiltonian constraint gives you generates gauge transformations, which are like time reparametrizations, and then the diffeomorphism constraints give you generate gauge transformations, which give you for the spatial coordinates. And since we're working in first class system, we also have these Gauss constraints, which eliminates this freedom of rotation of triads. And of course, again, this is just all classical. This is all that is probably known to all of you. So I'm not going to spend too much time on this. But the point is, once these constraints are satisfied and once they satisfy this algebra, then this formulation is space-time covariant, although we start off by splitting up four-dimensional space-time into spatial hypersurfaces, which evolve in time. So this is what the algebra looks like. And one easy way to think about this for anyone who is not so familiar with this hypersurface deformation algebra is that this is the generalization of the local Poincaré algebra for Minkowski spacetimes. So just like the Poincaré algebra gives you its isometric group of Minkowski, similarly for full gravity, your symmetry group is four-dimensional diffeomorphisms, and this algebra gives you diffeomorphism invariants as long as you have two types of, so you have this, these are the generators of your spatial diffeomorphisms, whereas these are the generator of time diffeomorphisms. And the interesting thing about this algebra is that there is a structure function appearing in here between two time transformations, and this structure function is the inverse of the induced spatial metric, the induced metric on the spatial surface that you have. So this cannot technically be an algebra or a Lie algebra because of this reason that you have this because you have this structure function appearing here instead of a structure constant, which we're used to. So what we know about this is that this has been shown long ago that the Hamiltonian diffeomorphism constraint as derived from GR indeed satisfies this algebra. And in fact, it's more than that because you can have higher curvature theories and so on. As long as they are covariant, they all satisfy this hypersurface deformation algebra. So this gives you a notion of general covariance. The essential point is that the gauge transformations that are generated by these constraints represent the coordinate freedom of general relativity. And they do so only, of course, once the constraints are satisfied, so on shell, like this, because these are the space-time lead derivatives of some arbitrary space-space function on the right-hand side over here, which gives you the coordinate freedom. Also, it has been shown that if you start with this algebra and restrict yourself to second-order derivatives of the metric and extrinsic curvature, you can uniquely get back Einstein's equation up to the cosmological constant by these people long ago. And finally, it is important to note that, of course, this constraints, this algebra of constraints is tells you some, the off-shell property of these of this algebra is important. Just and it is true also in the Lagrangian formulation. You can think of any metric can give you a notion of covariance as long as you contract indices correctly, and it does not have to be that that metric is a solution to Einstein's equation. So similarly, you don't need just on-shell properties are not enough. You need to look at the full off-shell property of this algebra to see whether your theory is covariant or not. And this is, of course, still all classical. So what do I expect? Why am I worrying about covariance? It's because in some quantum gravity theory, I do not expect just the Lagrangian to change or pick up quantum modifications, but also that the measure might do so. And indeed, there might not be a well-defined notion of a line element once such quantum modifications come in, as I shall show you. So the idea is that, as I mentioned already, that once you have this canonical quantization, you might not have an underlying Riemannian geometry anymore. And this is made explicit because you will not, because we don't have a metric structure in some models of quantum gravity. And then then we have to worry about what kind of an underlying structure do we have. Is it some sort of more exotic non-commutative geometry or fractal spacetimes or something, which Loop quantum gravity indeed is a coarse-grained picture of it. And I'm using this word obviously very loosely here just to say that you have some underground, very exotic geometry which can still be viewed, which has a well-defined classical limit and which maybe can be viewed as like corrections coming from Loop quantum gravity will also give you similar kind of effects as you would have for an underlying exotic non-commutative geometry, non-associative geometry, something like this. Okay, so now I want to define what is covariance in a quantum theory, in a canonical quantized theory. What do I require when I say there is some well-defined notion of covariance? And the first point is that the algebra of constraints, once you include these quantum corrections, that must still be closed so that you don't have any anomalies. And this is the very minimal requirement, of course, because unless you have closed brackets and you have anomalies, then what you're violating here is gauge transformations. So indeed, there's a mismatch of degrees of freedom counting unless you have the same amount of spurious degrees of freedom which are being eliminated by these constraints as generators of gauge transformations. So you must have a closed notion of the quantum algebra, if you will. And also this quantum algebra that you have, even if it is closed, it must have a well-defined classical limit that is identical with the classical hypersurface deformation algebra that I showed you.
Maybe you didn't address this, but these are operators and they require definitions, they require regularization, normalization, and so forth. They require boundary products. So just the fact that these are operator products and require regularization is going to affect these demands on the algebra.
Yes. Yes, so what I'm going to show that you can do this, so most of these calculations has been done as in effective theory where you calculate, where you do not work with explicit quantum operators. But if you do so, even in those theories, the kind of regularizations that you have or this higher moment corrections that you can have because of these operator effects, those do not deform the algebra. So the point is, yes, those effects are important and has to be taken into account when you define the closed algebra, but we shall show that those effects do not change the structure functions, at least for...
In a limit, if the regulator is removed or the regulated operator. So say you have generators of spatial bipromorphisms and you regulate them in some.
Yes, yes.
Do you require that the regulated operators still have a closed algebra?
The regular operators should have a closed algebra, and in the limit when you remove them, then it should also reproduce the classical algebra. Like when you take the classical limit, you should also have the classical algebra. I require both these things.
Okay, let's see that one
more time. Also, like all of this is only for like the simplest systems, like symmetry-reduced systems, not for full gravity. None of the statements are for full gravity. But yeah, I will come back to this point at the end. And this second condition is slightly stronger than just the first one, because now we do not only require that this system is closed and anomaly-free, but also that this has this well-defined classical limit. So we can always reformulate such systems, as has been done by these gentlemen over here, for spherical symmetry or for other cases. But the point is, we must be able to come back to an algebra which gives us the usual hypersurface deformation algebra in the classical limit, and that's what we require for a covariant quantization. I'm going to elaborate on all these things later. This is just to give you the big picture. Okay, so now the second input is obviously this thing that I said, that there's singularity. It has been shown that for many different kind of mini superspace and midi superspace models, you can have singularity resolution in loop quantum gravity. And one of the crucial features of this is that you have this polymerization of these connection components where you replace them by some function of it. Like typically this is chosen to be the sine function. And it's not a choice, but rather this is derived in a rigorous way from you write down the curvature in terms of holonomies and you take some limits and you show that the classical limit does not exist because of some area gap coming from loop quantum gravity. And then you end up with a function that looks like this. But of course, this is only the choice for lowest spin representation, and Mark and I and some of the people are trying to see what these functions look like if you go to some higher spins. So this does not have to be specifically this particular form. This polymerization does not have to have this particular form. And to keep this, I want to keep this arbitrary just to allow for like quantization ambiguities and so on. So I'm just going to use the fact that this is replaced by some function of k. And this is what is all, I mean, this is something that you always use in not only loop quantum cosmology, where this has been studied extensively for anisotropic models and so on, but also for other black hole models like Schwarzschild, as I mentioned, and recently in CGHS black hole models, and also some Gaudi models and so on. So in all these things, you polymerize your connection with some function, which in these cases, once you want to quantize it explicitly, you have to choose it to be mostly like this sine function, but I'm not going to even use that. I'm just going to replace it with some function of k. Okay, so I've given you the two inputs. What's the big picture? The big picture is that we have a first-class system of constraints. Yeah, I'm really taking Daniel's suggestion very seriously. So we have a first-class system of constraints, classically, which form a closed system. But now there are phase space functions over here, which is the structure functions. And then we include quantum corrections. Mostly we'll do this in an effective way so that you include, in particular, this holonomy correction functions from loop quantum gravity, where you replace these k's with some local functions of k. And then you say that the quantum or these effective constraints obey a closed algebra, that you have an anomaly-free quantization such that there is no terms here which are not proportional to the constraints. And finally, you also require that this new algebra that you have for these modified constraints still satisfy a classical limit. Yes?
Do you require the ordering you have on the spine?
You mean here?
Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, yes, for the particular operator formulation that I have, I do also have to pick up particular ordering for these constraints so that the structure function ends up being on the left.
So as a set of joint constraint?
No, they're not. Not in the particular case that I am familiar with and I've studied in spherical symmetry. But the bigger question is like even for defective cases, you don't have operator orderings which show up here, and you should still not have some term which is not proportional to the constraints. Okay, so the best way to, I believe, to proceed is to just give you an example of where we tried this, and this is this spherical symmetric model, but vacuum case, you don't have any local physical degrees of freedom, because we have two canonical pairs, this k phi and d phi, the extrinsic curvatures and the conjugate triads, and along the angular direction and this radial direction, which I call x. And this is the familiar special metric written in terms of these variables. And this doesn't have any local degrees of freedom because I also have two constraints, the Hamiltonian and one non-trivial component of the diffeomorphism constraint. And as I promised, I'll just include polymerization as like some function of k phi and not choose sine k phi over delta or something like that, which people usually do. And then look at the constraint algebra. So this particular version is obviously, I'm showing you, is for effective constraints so that you just include this kind of corrections in your constraint, in your Hamiltonian constraint, and see how does this change the brackets. So what you find is that the other two brackets remain the same, except the commutator between the Hamiltonians or the modified, the Poisson bracket between this modified Hamiltonian constraints end up having some correction function beta in your algebra. So classically beta is obviously equal to 1, but now it turns out this is the second order derivative of this polymerization or correction function that you included here. So this calculation can also be done using operators as I just mentioned to Bianca's question, in the case of operators, you can find a suitable ordering for the Hamiltonian constraints such that you have this beta cube AB to the left and the diffeomorphism constraint to the right. And that calculation has been done at a formal level. So to answer Lee's question, you do not do, let's say, point splitting and then take away the regulator for point splitting, but just you keep the factor ordering. So you do care about how these commutators, how these operators are factor ordered. But that's the only operator effect that you have in those systems. But that's, as far as I know, that's the only system where operator orderings have been included. And most of the other systems that I'm going to refer to later on, they are just done in this effective calculation where you just say that you include quantum corrections in your constraints and see, does this even close? And in this particular case, you find that it does close, but with this modification. And the point is now, since this is a second order derivative of this correction function that you have, typically you can show that the singularity is resolved because this function is bounded and it reaches its maximum bound. So if it's the second order derivative, then this has to have a negative sign over here. And signature change is to be understood as now the sign over here is the same as that you would have for Euclidean gravity. So it's not essentially saying that you're going from a Lorentzian to Euclidean spacetime, but effectively that, because earlier, if you, let's say, start with beta equal to 1, which is the proper sign for a Lorentzian spacetime, then you end up with something here which is a negative sign, which is the same sign as you would expect for four-dimensional Euclidean space. And in this sense, signature change is like the word that is coined for this kind of an effect. So the main point is that we have a consistent deformation in the sense that none of these gauge conditions are broken. We have a closed algebra. You don't have anomalies. And as I already mentioned, this beta changes sign and the hypersurface deformation algebra has the same sign as it would for Euclidean gravity. But however, we cannot just define a line element by absorbing the beta in this QAB arbitrarily, because then this Q tilde AB that you have over here after this absorption does not transform in the same way as the DXA, as the coordinates do under these modified gauge transformations. So you cannot, you do not have a line element here any longer. But you can still try to get canonical transformations and field redefinitions such that you absorb this beta so in your, and you regain your classical hypersurface deformation brackets. And you can try to do that, and there is an example where you can do that, but only as long as beta does not change sign. And I mean, at this point, this is just a statement I'm making that you can only have such canonical transformations to absorb beta to give you the classical brackets as long as beta does not change sign, but I'm going to show you some more proofs for that. And a case where it has been possible to absorb beta is indeed where beta does not change sign. But this does resolve classical singularity because of this upper bound of the function that you are introducing. So this is non-singular signature change. But your model now is really of quantum spacetime because there is no Riemannian, there's no line element available to you any longer. So in this sense, this is non-Riemannian spacetime. And so if you don't have a line element, you cannot write down an action. So how do you do anything? Well, you treat the canonical formulation as the fundamental theory, and then you take these modified constraints as the generators of your modified gauge transformations, and you can still calculate everything you want by defining Dirac observables for this modified theory, and you can get the evolutions of or the equations of motion for such observables as well. So all of which you can do in Lagrangian theory, you can obviously do here as well. But you now just have the Hamiltonian picture. You do not have an equivalent action to refer to if you want to do these calculations. So this is something that I'm going to gloss over because I don't want to get into the details of how to think of this as a Lie algebraic system. But the main message from this is that so the Lie algebra is defined as a vector bundle over your smooth base manifold with together with a bracket, a Lie bracket on the set of sections of this vector bundle, along with an anchor map which obeys some properties, which I don't even list here. And then the hypersurface deformation algebra that I introduced you to can be shown that this is a Lie algebraoid. This has been shown like long ago. And where the base manifold is now given by this extrinsic curvature and the spatial metric. And then the sections on this on the vector bundle is given by the Lagrange multipliers, the shift and the lapse. And then finally, the main result that we find in this paper with Martin and other collaborators is that you can absorb this beta that appears in your bracket by either base transformations or fiber maps, but in both cases only as long as this beta does not change sign. So if I can absorb the beta in this hypersurface deformation algebra, that just means that you still have a classical space-time structure because the algebra tells you of the classical space-time structure. But it does not obviously mean that you don't have any quantum corrections in the equations of motion. In your equations of motion, you still have quantum corrections because the way you absorb this is by, let's say, changing the normal, so you don't have a standard normalization for the normal to the hypersurface. So you can get back the same, so what that would mean is that now the time evolution vector field will include corrections because your normal is not defined as it is done in the usual classical case. So your equations of motion still have quantum corrections, but at least you still have the same algebra, the hypersurface deformation algebra, which means that you still have a classical space-time structure. You still have Riemannian geometry. But you can do this only as long as this beta does not change sign. And you can show that if it does, like this is a requirement because this beta has to be, because this QAB has to be positive definite on your base manifold. And the main, yeah, as I said, like arbitrarily you would think that this beta is a function of KB of the extrinsic curvature and the spatial metric. So you have a whole infinite degrees of freedom, and these all give you different algebraoids. But turns out that the only two Lie algebraoids which cannot be mapped into each other is because of the sine of beta. The Cygnus function is the only thing that you cannot absorb. And the rest are all the same as far as Lie algebraoids are concerned. An example of that is the hypersurface deformation algebra for GR is the same as that for higher curvature theories, let's say quadratic gravity or something. And of course, both of these two theories do not give you the same equations of motion, but they do have the same underlying classical space-time structure. So from the point of view of a Lie algebraoid, they are equivalent. But what is not equivalent is if you have this beta changing sign. I'm obviously not showing you the proof, I'm just stating the result here. Okay, so now that I have shown you what happens for the particular case of loop quantum gravity, the spherical symmetric loop quantum gravity, let me just state some more results that how robust this result is or signature change is. So this has been done by a whole bunch of people for cosmological perturbations. So in loop quantum cosmology, you cannot, in homogeneous loop quantum cosmology, you cannot ask these questions of covariance because the diffeomorphism, special diffeomorphism constraint is trivially zero. So you cannot see what is happening on the right-hand side of your H with H bracket because it's just zero. But you can include perturbations, which you have to do anyway for a realistic model. And then you can ask these questions again of covariance and so on and include these holonomy corrections. And you find exactly the same conclusion that you have a signature change in deep quantum regimes in the form, in the sense that I've defined. And then we also looked at this 1 plus 1 dimensional CGHS black hole model, which I mentioned. And again, the classical singularity resolution has been shown by other people recently. And then what you can show is that again, these deformation functions get modified. You end up having a signature change in this model as well. And finally, very recently with Martin, we worked out this MIDI superspace model, which is we kept general. So we just said that this do not have any local degrees of freedom. You just have one inhomogeneous direction. So this covers a whole lot of models, like Schwarzschild, some Gaudi models, CGHS model, and so on. And you find that for such a model where you do not specify the other terms in the Hamiltonian constraint, you just keep them arbitrary functions, even for such a very general parametrization, you find that holonomy modifications necessarily lead to signature change. So we don't. So this obviously covers all the other models that I've mentioned over here, but you find that it is possible to not specify to particular classical models, but show that even for such a general parameterization, you have signature change once you include holonomy corrections.
Good. Just a quick question on the terminology. On the last slide, you said there's no Riemannian structure. So
I just mean that.
What do you mean by this?
Yeah, I just mean that you cannot write down a line element anymore if QAB changes sign. So I'm not giving an alternate. I'm not telling you what geometry it is. I'm just telling you that you cannot write down a metric anymore if this beta changes sign. You can for like lower, but so you can obviously, once you're away from the singularity and for low curvature regimes, you again can restrict yourself to one sign of the beta, and then you can do everything that you want to do. But in higher curvature regimes or deep quantum regimes, your beta is changing sign somewhere, and I'm not claiming I know exactly where it is changing sign, but it definitely is changing sign is for sure because it's the second derivative. And
so when you speak about signature change,
yeah,
you don't mean that the signature of the space-time metric changes because there is no space-time.
Exactly. So it is just to signature change is defined exactly like at some point you find that your space-time metric is Euclidean. And at some point, you find that it's Lorentzian. What happened in between, I don't know. I don't mean that it's effectively really changing from Lorentzian to Euclidean in a smooth or any way that I can quantify, not yet.
So what's the relation between beta and Lorentzian or Euclidean symmetry?
Oh, because in this bracket that you have, if beta is 1, which is the classical case, then we know that this is what you have for usual Lorentzian spacetimes. And if beta is -1, then this is what you have for Euclidean four space. So of course, there's a whole range of things which is happening in between. I don't know.
Okay. So you're saying this intermediate region where beta is neither -1 nor 1.
Yeah.
This is the region where there is no space time, where there is no geometry.
There is no geometry. Well, there might be geometry, no, Riemannian geometry. Like it might be non-comic. I don't know what it might be. But there is no. Yeah. There is no usual notion of space time.
Is there like a continuum of values between 1 and -1?
There is a continuum of values between 1 and -1, but beta. I don't know if beta. Can I say if there's a continuum of values? No, you have to then, because beta is related to this holonomy correction, so you have to then expand this holonomy corrections maybe in a perturbative series as long as that can be done. You can find a continuum of values, but that approximation might not be true for all values of your connection. Yes?
This is just what's the connection to singularity resolution? Does beta change sign when you go toward the singularity?
Oh, the singularity resolution connection is that typically the classical singularity is at the point where this bounded function reaches its maximum. This holonomy correction function that I've included, typically the classical singularity is at the point when this guy goes to its maximum. So classically, this is just going to infinity, of course. And that's where the singularity is. But now you replace it.
Is that where the beta changes
are? So at the maximum point, definitely beta is negative. But I don't know if beta changed sign there or somewhere. Like at which exact point beta changes sign is not known to me.
But the system bounces when you get back to the classical regime after the bounce. Is beta classical?
In our universe, like in that sense, after yeah, it is positive. Beta is positive.
So it's positive to begin with. There's some senior region where it changes sign, and then it's positive.
No, it's negative here because you don't take the point of view that it is bouncing. You say that at very high, like when beta is minus one, then you have a Euclidean space. You don't have a Lorentzian space-time there. So it is not connected. Like the usual LQC picture is not going to be allowed here, let's say, because here the point of view is that you have a Euclidean space and then you have a Lorentzian space at lower for lower beta, and then you have a Euclidean space for lower beta but with the opposite sign, but somewhere in between you don't know what is happening, but beta is changing sign.
I have another question.
Yes.
From what you said on the slides after that, it sounds like the only physical content is in the overall sign of beta, because it seems you can remove the actual value. Is that right?
No, that's only right up to the fact that if you're only concerned about what kind of structure your hypersurface deformation algebra is having, but it's not true for the equations of motion. So if you want to write down your equation of motion for the metric, then this beta does show up there. You cannot ever absorb it away. So.
But your question, okay, so then the other question would be your and this is related to what Wolfgang was asking, your definition of Riemannian structures, that is related to the symmetry algebra, right? Not necessarily the dynamics. Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, absolutely right.
But then would it be right to say that because I can locally remove the absolute value of beta, I can locally think of this as some kind of Lorentzian geometry or Riemannian geometry, as long as I don't care about global statements?
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
From a point of view?
Yes, yes, yes.
But then I can also think of this as a patching together, right? In some sense.
Okay. Yeah,
things that are locally Lorentzian.
Absolutely, you can think of them as like always locally Lorentzian or locally Euclidean.
Right.
That's absolutely correct, and you can patch them together. But you don't know how to patch them or exact region where beta is changing sign. That's the only point.
Okay.
So for these very high curvature regions, I don't know how to represent this.
So when exactly will change sign?
I can't give you an answer to that precisely because I don't know. I just can show you for sure that it changes sign at the classical singularity because of this second order derivative has to be negative there. But where it exactly did is something which we haven't figured out yet. And
right, but everywhere outside of singularity, it's Lorentzian, like it's the same sign. And then suddenly, in singularity, it changes sign. Where is it?
No, it's not in. It's just like, if you think of the black hole model, for example, like inside the core of the black hole, it's definitely Euclidean at some point. But how far this extends to, I don't know. Like, I don't know in the sense that I haven't sat down and calculated it. I'm not saying you cannot possibly do it. We just haven't done it yet. How is this related, let's say, to the horizon, black hole horizon or something? I don't know. I have to figure that out.
It
probably
also doesn't matter because it depends on the
model. Yeah,
sure,
but there's nothing coded. If there's just flat space, there's some of those no-change sign anywhere. Then, like, introduce some singularity somewhere. There's a black hole now. There's some place where it changes. But that's probably given by a free parameter. And where exactly that occurs is probably something
yeah.
You can tune to any value you want.
Okay. So, yeah. Where was I? Oh, not here yet. So yeah, so there's a whole lot of models. Like essentially, you can show that for every symmetry-reduced model where you have singularity resolution, you can also show that it will lead to signature change if you believe in this prescription that I've given you so far. So that's at least a consistent picture. You have some sort of interesting space-times, and you also have singularity resolution. So what's wrong with it? Well, the problem is that if you try to include local physical degrees of freedom in this prescription, then there are problems. So for example, if you have the spherical symmetry model, but you now couple it to a scalar field, and you try to implement holonomic corrections like the way I just described, you find that you don't have the closure of the algebra any longer. So it's not just deformed or anything, but you really cannot close this effective constraint system. You can try to do, you might think that this is something to do with adding matter, so you can try to do it for, like, say, polarized Gaudi. And in that case, you don't have to add matter. It has local degrees of freedom, but then if you include, again, holonomy corrections in an analogous way, you find that you cannot close these brackets either. So these modification functions, again, were assumed to be extremely general. We did not put any kind of specific restrictions on them for which this might be happening, so that's not definitely the problem. And we assume that the Poisson structure of this modified system is just like you would expect it to be. So this is really, this is where the effective approximation comes in, because you have, you're replacing your k-phi with some function, and then you expect this dot is like df dk-phi. So this dot is just the derivative with respect to its argument. And for instance, what happens in the spherical symmetric case, just to give you an idea, is that you now have, for the gravitational parts of the Hamiltonian constraints, you have the the deformation that I just described, like before. But the matter part, you do not have any such beta appearing. Now, you can imagine that you introduce this beta by hand by modifying the matter Hamiltonians. But if you do that, then the cross terms between gravitational and matter parts do not cancel any longer. So they are not zero any longer. So yeah, let's say we tried this, a lot of games to play with this, but you can actually show that there is at least a partial no-go theorem under these assumptions, where you cannot add matter in this way and still have your full system satisfy covariance in the sense of H with H gives you D. Maybe something in front, but at least D.
But I guess you only tried local Negroids.
Sorry?
I didn't
hear you.
Did you assume that the Hamiltonian action, because now you have local degrees of freedom.
Yes.
So you have something like 1D and you consider a spin network with vertices or something.
Yeah, so.
So,
yes.
And then you probably assume that the Hamiltonian is local or alpha local or something.
Yeah, we include this kind of corrections in the Hamiltonian, but you can try to do this also in the diffeomorphism constraint.
Hey, no, I'm just asking whether you assume that the Hamiltonians, have a local action.
Oh, yes.
This is actually, I don't know if they are kind of what we told alpha local, which means that they only act on one vertex. But this is a very strong assumption.
No, it is, but the point is there is other work where people tried to include the holonomy corrections, which are not local. So, for example, for the radial coordinate, the extrinsic curvature kx, you can try to include a correction which has to be non-local, because in those cases, the holonomies are over the edges of the spin network.
So what is the nearest neighbor?
It's still nearest neighbor, yes.
So just...
Yeah, you have to...
Many people understand local... I see. Usually it's nearest neighbor.
Right.
And ultra local would be only one vertex.
Right.
Actually, for ultra local, I would maybe expect that there could be closed algebra, or
would
you say
no? Yeah, so the ultra local case is where you do find a closed algebra for the purely gravitational case, but you don't anymore. And what you are, what we just discussed is this local, nearest neighbor thing. You can show that even the gravitational case, you cannot find this. But you don't need to, because you can eliminate the kx degree of freedom by a reformulation of the constraint. So you don't have to really implement holonomy corrections corresponding to kx. But
it could be that it's a closed algebra which is completely non-local.
Exactly. That can be totally true.
That's
yeah.
What I would actually expect for
That can be totally true. The point is, although we, for answering these questions of covariance and looking at the algebra, we did not actually specify spin network states. We did not specify any states where we take expectation values, but just try to modify the constraints with some functions. But you're right, we can try to modify the constraints with non-local functions and see what happens. It did not. So the motivation for the ultra-local case is obviously that because kx must be integrated out over this edge, and that's why you include non-local functions. But when we were including non-local functions, those were kept completely arbitrary. So they did not know about the fact that it should only have, you're doing this for a spin network state. So you just include some f of, as arbitrary as you can. So the most systematic analysis there was to expand these non-local holonomy corrections in a derivative expansion and show that within particular order of derivatives, whether they close or not.
But this non-local was nearest neighbor, or it's completely non-local?
So the non-local was just, I think in the paper that they have, the non-local was treated as you can expand this non-local function in a derivative expansion. That's the only assumption that you have. And then you try to show that whether they close within the same order of derivatives or not. And they find that no, it doesn't. It includes like higher order derivatives. I mean, I don't think it necessarily rules out all non-local functions, but I mean that's still a more general class. So it's not. It does not specify that you are only choosing nearest neighbor or any information about spin network states.
There's something that usually when you have a derivative expansion, what you mean by non-local is to infinite orders. There's all orders in derivative expansion.
Exactly.
In which case, there's not an issue of whether it closes the same order, because all orders are present.
It is all orders are present, but I did not do that work, but I think their assumption was that they include all orders in derivatives, but does it close order by order, I think is the assumption. I understand your point that it does not have to. It can be like you might have to include all orders in to see whether there's closure or not. Is that's probably what you were saying. Yeah, I think the point that they were finding is that if you have higher order corrections, they are if up to second order, if you find like there's a correction that comes which is third order and you include the third order terms, there's not a systematic way in which you can then write down the rest of the terms as a sum of all the higher orders. Like they were finding new terms which you cannot absorb in this higher order terms or something. But I'm not 100% on that. Like I agree that there, I'm absolutely certain in fact that for the non-local corrections, there's more generalizations to be made, which has not been tried yet. Okay, so of course, like as Bianca was suggesting, like is this very unique to our treatment, like something weird that we are doing, and how big is this problem if it isn't? So we tried looking at this other models that people have tried for this spherical symmetric loop quantum gravity, and where they have a loop quantization for the vacuum case, and you know they find that the Schwarzschild singularity is resolved. And then in this approach, what you end up doing is you abelianize the difficult part of the constraint algebra. So you define a new Hamiltonian constraint as a linear combination of your original Hamiltonian diffeomorphism constraints, and you keep the special diffeomorphism constraint unmodified. And then your H with the new H's gives you zero. And then you quantize this system. This is a Lie algebra system, so you know more about this, and you can quantize this, and you find that if you do that using the same polymerization that I was including as holonomy corrections, then you find that this, and you require that this is still true, that you have a covariant quantization, and this has the right classical limit. That quite remarkably, although the mathematics is completely different for these models because you abelianize them first and then quantize, you end up having the same restriction on your modification functions, and indeed you have signature change for the vacuum case. And then if you want to add matter in this formulation, you just cannot abelianize your classical constraints anymore. So like if it's completely classical, you can abelianize it, but if you include this holonomy corrections in your gravity part, and then you try to abelianize it after adding matter, you just can't abelianize it anymore. You can try to include some sort of holonomy corrections in the matter part as well, but at least for the ones that they have tried and we have tried, you cannot. There are still the same kind of obstructions that we found to our no-go theorem. So and then again, the same game has been played for the CGHS model. These are essentially all like this two-dimensional dilatonic models, not much difference in their structure, and you kind of get the same results. So this is a problem that goes beyond obviously what we were trying to do, because you can't have a completely different formulation of doing this, and you still end up with similar kind of obstructions, but which come from very different mathematical considerations. So one idea might be that okay, what you're doing is for effective constraints. So what really should be done is to also include like fluctuations and higher moments of your quantum state, and then these corrections that you expect from any perturbative corrections that you expect from any quantum gravity theory can cancel these deformations that you see from your holonomy corrections, and you end up having the same hypersurface deformation bracket, or you can maybe even close this bracket. And the answer to this is unambiguously no, because of this work that I did with Martin, and we find that these kind of moments never deform your algebra. So your, as I mentioned before, like these moments, including these moments, will obviously change your equations of motion, but it does not change your algebra structure, and it does not deform your structure functions. And although this is done in an effective formulation, you can also show that these conclusions are actually also applicable in deep quantum regimes, because this is asking just whether the algebra remains closed or not, and that does not depend on whether you have a formal H-bar expansion or not. In any case, this is what you expect, because if you really believe that higher curvature actions can be derived from this kind of moment corrections, then it has already been shown by these people that higher curvature actions, as I mentioned, has the same algebra as for classical GR. Okay, so what are the possible ways out? This is a fix, and already I think Bianca suggested one, which is not listed here, is like you include non-local corrections in a more imaginative way. And certainly that's not something, it's not something that we haven't tried, but not with success so far. So one has been to like recently propose that you change the Poisson, you change the polymerization scheme altogether, such that your Poisson bracket between the new variables stays the same as in the classical case. And this means that you not only polymerize your K5 variable, but also your E5 variable in an inverse way. So this has some problems, because it's not clear why you should do this at all. Like, so this doesn't come from some, in usual polymerization picture comes from some very rigorous loop on cosmology derivation. Yes?
I'm still confused about the thing that I asked you before. And this is a question that goes way back into the history of gravity. You're still not specifying a regularization procedure. And so when you write that E5 goes to E5 times cosine, K5 and E5 don't commute. So I don't know what you mean with that regularization procedure.
Oh, this over here, what I write is just like the kind of the way you would replace this E5 by this, but of course when you put hats, then you have to be careful about how you order these things and how you... I just don't show you the way that this is implemented in this paper.
But Lee, in principle, I think it's always the effective theory, so it's always a classical expression, I guess.
But in this case,
they discussion about Poisson closing of algebra, it's about the effective dynamics.
So even at the effective level, it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, the point is, in this case, they indeed study the quantum theory, and well, in this case, it's really bad because they find that the kernel of the Hamiltonian constraint is, I think, so far they haven't found anything other than the trivial zero k state. But indeed, they do have a mechanism to translate this with proper hats on these operators. In this formulation.
So I'm
not just writing that out. I'm not just.
I don't know. I mean, the whole question: how do you define the inverse of this cosine, which can be zero?
Yeah, exactly. So the way they do it is they say that point is not included in their Hilbert space, so they remove it by hand.
Okay.
Which is one of the problems I was going to mention, because that is the point where you have the classical singularity.
Yeah, it seems graphite. But this is the spherical symmetric case, if you see it.
Yeah.
Is that some other work? Maybe, okay, because Paul gave a talk here and I think he had far too many solutions.
No, that's true. That's the case which I mentioned earlier, like here. Uh-huh. In these papers, they have solutions, and but only for the gravitational case. Okay. So once you try to add matter to this, you have all these same kind of obstructions that they found, that they cannot abelianize their algebra anymore, and that's the problem. Uh-huh. So now this is like a paper from, I guess, March this year or something, where they try to include the matter, and you can include matter now, but the problem is now your polymerization scheme has changed completely. So you can have a quantum theory, but it's not interesting for many reasons, one of which is what you mentioned, that you have to remove this inverse does not exist everywhere. So you have to remove some points from the definition of your from the domain of this operator, and those are the interesting points. So this is very recent paper. So they have like those solutions are all very true, but those are only for gravity. And then you can have a background treatment, which is to say that you loop quantize the background, and then you add cosmological perturbations on top of it using, let's say, Trest metric, which has been done by Abhay and many other people. And in this case, In this case, of course, this is somewhat in conflict with what we are saying, because we are saying that you cannot write down precisely this, that you cannot write down an effective metric in the deep quantum regime. So this is true. Like, we do find that you can do that. You can write down a Dress metric for low curvature regimes, and that's perfectly OK. But it's more complicated to see, or it's not clear to us at least how you can do this in the deep quantum regime because of the obstructions that we find of this signature change and so on. But more generally, if you look at this for spherical symmetric models, what has been done, in that case, you don't have perturbative inhomogeneity. So you cannot just quantize a homogeneous background anymore because homogeneity is not perturbative in spherical symmetry case. And in this case, you do indeed have this problem of this non-matching of gravity and matter sector. So what I mean by this non-matching covariance is that your H gravity with H gravity gives you like a beta times D gravity, but your matter parts just give you with beta equal to 1. So what has been tried so far in this is to quantize the background, and then you have a lattice on which you put matter. But in that case, you do not go back and check if the full matter plus gravity system is covariant or not, because you've already assumed some gauge fixings to write down your effective metric and putting matter on this, like on the lattice that you have. So this lattice does not have to come from gravity. You can put matter obviously on any lattice, and it's still to be seen that you have to show that this whole system is covariant. And there are other issues about this kind of background treatment, which let me not go into because it's not useful for what I'm going to say next, which is like, okay, is there any other way? And one which we are working on recently is to just go back to self-dual Aschbecker variables, which have a whole host of problems on their own, but can they solve this covariance problem is what we were asking. And the example that I want to show you is for this scalar cosmological perturbations around LQC. So this, the self-dual LQC has been studied recently by a lot of people, at least two groups, one by Jibril and Mark, I think, and Karim Nui and all these people, and then also by Edward Wilson Ewing in a different formulation. And the point is now you have a holonomic correction which is included in the same way that you do it for real cases, but except the C is now, this is complex now. And then your total Hamiltonian, if you write it out to like second order perturbations, takes this form where you have these correction functions, not only in the background, but also correction functions in your perturbation Hamiltonians. So these correction functions do not depend on perturbations, they only depend on your background variable, but these are different correction functions which must go to a well-defined classical limit, of course. And then you require consistency conditions are that you require that these still form a closed algebra, and whether you, how many of these remains independent is to be seen. And we find that exactly all of this is eliminated, like basically all of these correction functions you can write in terms of the correction function that appears in the background. So in real Lucan cosmology case, you would just say that all of this can be written in terms of some derivatives of the sine square k over sine square delta k over delta function that you have in the background. And this also obviously does have the correct classical limit. So you have, so it might have been that once you include this kind of correction functions, you could have gotten that your only solution is the GR solution. And but it, we have shown that no, you have non-trivial solutions which are not GR. And this is of course absolutely done in the effective formulation. And then you find that the structure functions remain unchanged. So in this case, you don't have signature change. You don't have any sort of deformation of your constraint algebra. But you do pick up like correction functions in the diffeomorphism constraint, which is not typically what happens in loop quantum gravity. So you need to define you somehow have to define a infinitesimal quantum diffeomorphism constraint if you want to really seriously implement the scheme. In this case, it is just done, you know, assuming that you have some effective diffeomorphism constraint, and then you find that if you want to include this correction in the Hamiltonians, you indeed have to have some correction in the diffeomorphism constraint as well. So maybe this is showing you again, like, you know, there's something weird going on in your, because now the gauge transformations generated by your spatial diffeomorphism is obviously not just spatial coordinate transformations. And we did something similar for spherical symmetry with this kind of exactly same results, that you don't have any deformations to your algebra, but you do have, and it stays the same in this case as well. So you don't have any signature change in that sense. Okay, so let me summarize and then I can just take questions. So what have we learned? That, you know, requiring covariance is a very restrictive consistency condition. You cannot just include any putative quantum effect that you want, because you should go back and check that your algebra is closed and it has this well-defined classical limit. And then for these interesting effects that arise in loop quantum gravity, which is this holonomic corrections, you do have that these classical structures sometimes are not available to you anymore, at least if you believe our formulation. And then it goes further than that, because now you show that indeed disclosure of this effective constraint algebra is very difficult to obtain in some cases where you have these local physical degrees of freedom. So you have to, this is a challenge, you have to overcome it in some way. And one way that we have tried so far is to go back to self-dual variables, and at least for perturbative cosmology and so on, you can answer questions about the reality conditions without too much difficulty, because at least for the background, your spin connection is zero, so you don't have the complicated reality conditions. Then for the perturbations, for linear perturbations, at least they are tractable and you can do something with it. And we're still working on this to find out what the gauge invariant variables are here. And then looking ahead, what can such deformed covariance tell us? So already these people worked out that if you start with such a deformed hypersurface deformation algebra and take a flat limit, then what kind of a Poincaré algebra do you get? And you find that you have a Kappa Poincaré non-commutative spacetime, as was figured out by these people. And then we figured out what it means to have, like, what kind of dispersion relations do particles have on such kind of non-commutative spacetimes in this work. What is another very interesting thing to study would be to answer probably partially Wolfgang's question is like, so if you don't have this Riemannian structure in between, then what do you have? And we don't know, so let's do it the other way around. Let's try to study what is, we have these new methods of using these Lie algebraids to study the hypersurface deformation algebra. So as long as you give me a well-defined notion of a Lie derivative and a well-defined notion of a metric, I can play the same games and I can have the same techniques to calculate this algebra for non-commutative and non-associative spacetimes. Fractal is a little bit more ambitious. But at least for these cases, there is well-defined notion of Lie derivatives, and then we using this other definition. So you don't need to go back to the typical way that you derive these brackets in ADM, but rather use this n Gaussian vector fields for these derivations, which are well-defined for non-commutative and non-associative geometries. And then there's a whole host of things that has to be done if you have to take this picture of self-dual variables seriously, including that why can we violate this Kukash-Teitelbaum-Hoffmann uniqueness theorem that you start from this algebra, which do not have any deformation, which is the same as the classical hypersurface deformation algebra, then you end up with GR in the effective theory. So why can we subvert this uniqueness theorem? And maybe that is included in this idea that you have to now change this spatial diffeomorphism constraint. So it means something else. What the spatial hypersurfaces mean is something that is unclear at all. And then, of course, the most interesting thing here is to derive like a polymerization function now, which will include Hadamard corrections. So we just kept it arbitrary, but you have to have a well-defined way to do this. One has been studied is through an analytic continuation of the real case, and then one has been studied by Edward Wilson Ewing, which is using these generalized holonomies. So you can define them in some cases, but we have to make this procedure more rigorous. And of course, included in here is the question about reality conditions, which is probably the toughest thing for doing self-dual variables. Thank you.
Questions?
So I found this very interesting. Sorry. You mentioned this discussion of being able to absorb the sign of beta in the field redefinition. Have you looked at this also in the self-dual case? You find this funny modifications in the diffeomorphism constraint. You haven't looked at it?
No.
Even in the simpler case of if you just have a Lie algebra, you can write, if you choose your generators differently, you can write it in a form that you won't recognize it anymore. So it seems to me that there should be a way of sort of classifying the possible deformations and seeing which ones can actually be absorbed in some way, for example, in a field redefinition. Because the statements you're making about non-existence of space-time and so on seem very...
No, this is true. We have done this systematically, this classification, but only for real variables.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what happens with self-dual case, but it is true that... actually, you can turn this around, and what we have shown in that paper is you can just choose classical GR, and then now say that your normalization, the normal does not satisfy the standard normalization, but it has a beta factor in it. And of course, you know that your dynamics has to be GR because that's what you're working with, but your brackets end up having a beta in them. So what that means is that if you once you write down your equations of motion, then you get a beta from the brackets, but also there is a corresponding canceling beta coming from the normal that you have now, the new normal, and they must exactly cancel. So you can actually, this is the argument which we use to turn it around and say that in loop quantum gravity, you start off with a normal that is just the usual normal, so it's normalized. And then indeed, if you have a beta that appears in your brackets, then your equations of motions must have a beta because now there is no normal to compensate for it or cancel it. I mean, the normal is just an example I'm giving you, but you can also play this game more and say that, well, the normal is not exactly the normal and it's like not orthogonal in that sense, and play games with it and show that what kind of corrections you get for that as well. So you can do this classification for all cases. We have just done it for the, yeah, for the real case so far. And in the real case, actually, you don't refer to the Staker variables, because you're not including, it's not like you're deriving the brackets from loop quantum gravity, but you are just trying to say what kind of Lie algebras are equivalent to each other. And so you just work with extrinsic curvatures and spatial metrics. So it might just be in a self-dual case, I mean, not might just be, it is definitely that it's difficult to implement reality conditions and get back the usual real metric and extrinsic curvature and so on. But if you believe that you can do that, like at least someday you will be able to do this or something like this, then these two pictures are equivalent. Like you have already classified all that is there to, because like you are not going down to the Staker variables picture at all. But I mean, there can be many non-trivial steps in there. For example, we always assume that your diffeomorphism constraint is unmodified in the classification that we did, and that might not be something that you can assume anymore.
So let me try to run a sense philosophy. So usually you consider this kind of on an effective level, so it's about poisson brackets and classical things. And it's also supposed to be a field theory, so it's always continuum.
Yes.
So for the general case, you would claim that you would still consider effective continuum constraints also the work of, say, act on spin at the function.
Yes.
With some quantum corrections.
Yes.
Because you know this work on the discretization of like the 3D constraints.
Yes.
Actually, I'm fully convinced. I mean, you do get a closed algebra, yes, also in the quantum case. Actually.
Yes, you do, yes.
But for instance, there, the biggest change is on the discretization. And actually, there's also not really an obvious choice of algebra. I mean, the algebra changes in what you decide to be the normal. There are many choices.
So the choice we are defining is that you can reformulate your constraints to now look at something which is simpler, but then at the end of the day you should always be able to go back like through some transformation to a quantum algebra whose classical limit is the same as the Dirac algebra.
Yeah, but you also take a continuum limit there.
That is true, yes. Yeah, and that's not, okay, yeah.
Just looking at your discretization as a classical case,
absolutely.
And just saying that we had many different algebras, they were all equivalent to each other. But it was not, I mean, in this case it's not very obvious what you should choose as a normal in this geometric interpretation.
So in that case, particularly, I totally agree with you, and I mean, what we're doing is, okay, so this is on the same level of formality of, like, let's say your singularity resolution. Once I know how to take the continuum limit of that system, then I should come back and check this, my algebra closure and all these things for this continuum limit. But like that, the thing that is typically done is you have your spin network states, and then you define like the general state, which is like, you know, this on this Hilbert space, and then you show that singularity is resolved because your zero volume is decoupled, right? And you do not take the continuum limit in that case either. Yeah, so it's only at that level that you include this Solanum corrections, like with polymerization, which they, in that work also, like you do by hand, and then you just see what is the effect of the constraints on your physical Hilbert space, like how you.
Can I just ask you what your global picture is? I mean, the full theory with no symmetry reduction has big problems with the algebra of Hamiltonian constraints. and it's had so since the 1950s and 1960s. And loop quantum gravity didn't resolve the problem. The Tiemann regularization of the constraint leads to an ultra-local algebra, which is not sufficient. So, and as far as I know, that's where we are with the full theory. So now you're discussing working with a variety of models. Supposing you solve the issue in the model, does the work stop there? Is that the ambition of the work? Or is there any hope of learning anything that might take you back and help you solve the problem in the real thing?
So I guess the philosophy is that in this symmetry reduced models, people have included quantum corrections, which have resulted in singularity resolutions. Mm-hmm. And the point of view is, if you include this, if you take this correction seriously and go back and then check this algebra, then you find some deformations or even worse, some problems of closure and so on.
Mm-hmm.
First thing we have to do is to do this consistently and see how you can go beyond this, like the most simple symmetry reduced models and include like local degrees of freedom, and can you still close the algebra in that case? If we find a consistent way of doing that and also resolving the singularity, which seems to come from similar kind of effects, this holonomy corrections, then of course you go back to like more complicated systems and try to implement this in those. So to answer your question, the big question about the full theory, we can't even go beyond like local, like global degrees of freedom so far. So it's like far cry, like to, you know, go and see what's going on in the full theory. But then you can't do singularity resolution in the full theory either. You only choose like toy models for this. And just to show that even in these toy models, you can resolve singularity, but it also necessarily gives you sort of new problems or new challenges the way you look at it. And you have to solve these challenges, and that might result in some interesting results, like this kind of non-Riemannian geometries, but also it will result in some difficulties once you try to include, let's say, local degrees of freedom.
So the question that you're trying, one of the questions you're trying to ask is there a MIDI pseudospace model with local degrees of freedom that has both singularity elimination and a consistent algebra of constraints?
Precisely.
And the answer is, so far you don't have.
No, so far the answer is like every model where you can have singularity resolution, you show that there is this, you can close the algebra, but you cannot. And then you have this deformed notion. Beyond those models, for example, Gaudi models and
so
on.
Stop there. So there are models with local degrees of freedom.
No local degrees. So all the models which have been quantized in a covariant way do not have local degrees of freedom, and they have singularity resolution, like Schwarzschild and loop quantum cosmology.
Good. Okay. So there's no model with local degrees of freedom which has both singularity resolution and consistent
algebra. Maybe I misspoke. There is. Which is loop quantum cosmology with perturbative inhomogeneities. That has local degrees of freedom. And in that case, singularity is resolved, and you have a consistent algebra.
So why is that good enough for you?
Because this only works for this perturbative inhomogeneity case. Like if you have anything beyond that, if you have some sort of where you don't have perturbative inhomogeneity, you have just some inhomogeneous model like Schwarzschild, and you want to study, even without this question, if you just want to study the interior of Schwarzschild and you want to study how this black hole formation takes place, you need to add matter to this model and then study the dynamics. The point is you cannot right now. So anything beyond LQC with inhomogeneous perturbations, you cannot.
Okay. All right, no further questions? Let's thank Sudo again.
Thank you.